kind of a temporary term.
Yes, as I was saying, the Chinese had obviously got to our side of the river, although the artillery clearly had killed a large number of Chinese, and so had our Bren guns. Sheer weight of numbers finally allowed them to come across. We were, after all, only 15 men against some 2,000-3,000 Chinese, which is outnumbered by quite an amount, as I imagine you can realize. Anyway, so I gave the to withdraw. We were then virtually out of ammunition, and because they were already alongside us, the first bit of withdrawal was done at the double, because we were in danger of being cut off. And we must have run, I would have thought, best part of half a mile, and then after that point we got level with the A Company position and marched back to our platoon position in C Company, just near battalion headquarters. Corporal Manley took the patrol back up the hill, and I went to report in to battalion headquarters.
What kind of casualties do you think the Chinese must have suffered?
That I can't accurately say. I originally thought it was about 200, but I have a feeling it was, on thinking about it, that it has to have been more than that, because the weight of firepower was enormous on one comparatively small area.
What were your feelings about how your unit had performed?
I thought everybody had performed fine. They'd done their duty. Everybody was... there were just no problems to it at all. In fact, the only thing I felt about it was a slight sense of unreality, in that, having been at the School of Infantry Warminster not that many years before, like, what was it, a year and a half, something like that, maybe even less, I had the slight feeling that, gosh, somebody is going to come up, tap me on the shoulder and say, well, that was quite a good answer to that solution, but I was thinking that the directing staff would say something like that, but of course it was just a figment of the imagination.
When you were faced with that situation, did you think that you might be overrun and that it might be the end for you all?
At which point do you mean?
Whilst you were opposing that Chinese crossing.
Well, if you remember, I did say that I had been told by Colonel Kahn that if there were more than 30 people, we were to withdraw. So, in fact, that number had been superseded by about 100 times. So I always knew that it wasn't a question of my staying there to the last man or anything like that. I was told I should withdraw. So I did eventually.
So how much personal fear would have been involved for you, if any?
This isn't bragging. Actually, none at all. To begin with, I was far too busy from the moment Colonel Kahn said, take the patrol down, to the time when we got back. There was far too much going on. I didn't have time to think of being frightened. And as a matter of fact, I don't think many Chinese rounds were coming near us. It was hard to say, but I don't think they were.
Were any comments being passed by your men that you recollect about what was happening?
No, they were all too busy too. You see, it all took place in a comparatively short time. I mean, from the moment it started at 10 o'clock to the moment we withdrew, somewhere around about 22:30, only 30 minutes had gone, and we were all too busy. Nobody said very much, that I recall.
Were they not saying words to the effect that, my goodness, look at this lot?
Holy mackerel, look at all them engines, yes. No, they weren't, because, in fact, they could only see them each time the para-illuminating went up. And I think they were quite surprised, but as soon as they saw them, they opened up with the weapons that they had. And if you remember, you see, there were two people on each Bren, so that's six of the number. Myself and Corporal Manley brings it to eight. We had two Korean policemen attached, and they... So there wasn't really very many people other than the Bren gunners to think too much about what was happening. They just got on with the job of, killing the Chinese.
How did you feel after the battle?
Very elated. On a high, as it would be known nowadays. Then, of course, it wasn't called a high. And, yes, adrenaline had not been invented, as they say.
What happened to you next?
Yes. I went back up to my platoon, made sure we replenished all the ammunition that we had expended, and then awaited developments. I must say, this was perhaps a mistake I made, because what one should have done is to ensure that a large number of people got some sleep. The fact is, I don't think any of us got any sleep that night at all, because we could hear A Company being attacked, that was right forward, sort of closer to the river than ourselves. And then sometime later, B Company was attacked. They were right up on the slopes of Kamaksan, the very high mountain in this area. And we were listening to this. Following morning, of course, when light broke, we could see the people in front of us in what had been the D Company position. And eventually we found that we were being fired on. I should explain that something that is not maybe clear is that the distances that we were, for example, my platoon from company headquarters, it took me at least 12 minutes to walk there from where I was, which means that it's really quite a distance away. I could not see anything other than my own platoon by way of friendly forces. Couldn't see a thing, nothing at all. Company commander was an awful long away, and the other platoons, again, were higher up the hill. So I didn't see them. There was a little feeling of loneliness at that point. Anyway, finally, there was a lot of firing going on, and then, of course, the fog of battle descended, as in inverted commas, but that's exactly what it did. Sometime, I got the impression that, in fact, that the rest of the battalion had been overrun and had withdrawn. I should say at this point that the radio batteries had ceased to function, so I was not in communication with my company commander, Major Mitchell, at all. In fact, wasn't in communication with anybody. So, after a while, I came to the conclusion that we'd better go, and there seemed to be some people on the high hill, which was Sault Marie. So I said, right, we will go up to Sault Marie, which meant crossing this valley floor and then climbing up to the top. Eventually, we did do just that, and we climbed. No, first of all, come to think of it, there was some Chinese there who suddenly appeared. We did, fortunately, I think they were more surprised than we were, and we shot them and then continued our movement up the hill. Eventually, we realized that the majority of the battalion was at the top of this hill. This was now Sault Marie we were at. B Company had, by then, been very much reduced in their numbers. The numbers had been killed or captured already. They were commanded by Major Dennis Harding, and because at that point I was only a lieutenant, and C Company's numbers were also reduced, it was decided, Colonel Kahn decided to amalgamate B and C companies under Major Dennis Harding with myself as 2IC. What I should have said, though, before that, come to think of it, he did say, did give the orders before we were amalgamated that C Company would lead the way out of this hill, from the hill, starting the first light the following morning. And now that did give me cause for concern a bit, as I thought to myself, here I am, not that old, not that many soldiers in C Company, and leading the battalion out through the lines across this rather inhospitable mountains. However, in fact, that order was rescinded and B and C companies were amalgamated, such as they were, and we took up a position to the south of this L-shaped feature, which was Sault Marie. And so the night went past.
Did you sleep?
No. This was one of the problems. That became the third night that I didn't sleep.
In what physical state were you by now then?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Had you managed to eat and drink?
Up to that point, yes. But after that point, no. There was no food. And that was when I first learnt to smoke. Somebody had a cigarette, I think it was Dennis Harding, passed me one. My original reaction was no. And then the following day, yes, I remember now, there was a Chinese machine gun which was firing what seemed to be a very long distance away. And they were fortunately firing tracer. And what I hadn't believed was possible was that you could actually see it coming towards you and to take the precautions to duck. But when it started flicking bits of the undergrowth around about sort of 2 foot away from where we are, I thought a cigarette might be quite a nice idea.
Did you not even get anything to drink?
Only people had what was in their water bottles at that point.
What happened to you next?
Well, then there was the following night. This was now, we're on to the fourth night. And in the following dawn, we're now on to the 25th, yes, morning of the 25th, at about, I suppose it was 5 o'clock in the morning, something like that. There were these Chinese bugles. I'm sure you've heard of them. Yes, they were sounded a totally different sound to our own British bugles. Very eerie, and we couldn't see where it was coming from because the Chinese, were below the mist and we were above the mist. And of course, it was at that time that Colonel Kahn told Drum Major Buss to reply to this and blow his own bugle, which he did magnificently. Every call there was, except retreat, of course. And that, after that, we never heard another Chinese bugle again. And then the attack started in earnest. First of all, it started not on our side, the CB company side, but on the A company, D company, which was the other side of this L-shaped feature. I should point out that this hill is totally unlike any hill around here in Dorset. The ridge was more like a spine, in that I doubt the ridge was more than a maximum of 20 yards across, if that, probably much less. No, on second thoughts, I would say it was a maximum of 10 yards across. So it's a very narrow ridge leading up in an L-shaped feature. And they attacked A Company, and A Company repulsed them for a bit, but then they were down, very short on ammunition. I think they were reduced to throwing stones, and finally they were overrun. We too had not been attacked at that point on our side, except by this machine gun from a distance, machine guns, I suppose, from a distance. And a number of our soldiers were wounded in C and B Company. At this time, Dennis Harding told me to go and arrange for defensive fire from our own artillery. This meant, because we weren't in radio contact with battalion headquarters, running along the top of the ridge and going to battalion headquarters and asking for defensive fire. This I did some three times. And it was at one of these times I saw the signals officer, Richard Reeve Tucker. Most peculiar thing, I saw him with a hole in his forehead. He quite clearly, a bullet had got him in the forehead, and yet he was still talking for a few minutes after that. But anyhow, when I went there next, he had died. But I've never been more surprised to see somebody with a hole in the forehead right there and still talking. Very strange experience.
Right in the centre of his forehead.
Yep.
Any incidents you can remember from that day that stick out in your mind?
Yes, that was the one that really struck me, this one of Richard being shot in the forehead. Remarkable affair. And, of course, the previous one earlier on in the morning of the bugles and the drum major blowing everything. It really was a tour de force, I think, as they call it. Then, later on, I couldn't say what time it was, the word came that we were to make our own way out as best we could, because the previously expected tanks that were, and the Filipinos who were to come and relieve us, we were now completely cut off, of course, were not going to come. And we were told to make our way south as best we can and rejoin friendly lines. Of course, at this point, friendly lines were, I don't exactly know how far back they were, but they have to have been at least 10 miles, if not more, because the artillery positions, that's 45 Field Regiment, they were firing over open sites, meaning that the Chinese were right close to them before they withdrew themselves. So they were a long way back. So we did. Everybody was told, briefed, what to do. Pointed out a certain hill in the distance, and people were told that was the place to aim for. We did. We scrambled down to the bottom of this hill, and to our immense surprise, there were no Chinese, or to my immense surprise anyway, there were no Chinese at the bottom there. Dennis Harding and myself managed to get... Oh, we'd been told not to go in a form body, but to go in groups of three or four or something like that, but to spread out. So there was no question of being in a form body. And we'd decided to make for a ridge some distance away. Well, we made this ridge, no problem at all. And still no sign of any Chinese at that point. We walked on during the night. Gradually, we were heading, I suppose, south, southwest, something like that. And at that point, the shortage of sleep definitely caught up with me. I was seeing hallucinations as we were walking along. And of course, we were also didn't have any food, and maybe that was helping. But I think basically it was the shortage of sleep, because I had really lost one more, and my patrol had lost one more night's sleep than most other people had. So we were 1 hour behind. Anyhow, we walked. We did sleep a little bit during that night, very little, about 2 hours, something like that, because we couldn't see where we were going. Following morning, we got up as soon as the sun was up, or the light, it got light, and carried on walking. Finally, we came across, I suppose it was about 11 o'clock in the morning. The following morning, we're now on the 26th, the majority of the battalion had either been killed or captured on the 25th, but this was the morning of the 26th. We then spotted one Chinese sentry, and Dennis Harding drew his revolver, took aim, and missed him, whereupon the whole of the valley stood up, and we realized we'd walked straight into a large body of Chinese. It must have been 1,000, 2,000, something like that. It was quite amusing, because the Chinaman who'd been fired at, he was very annoyed indeed, but his chums round him thought it was a bit of a joke. And of course, at this point, with so many people around us, that we had no choice. I had no weapon and no ammunition, and Dennis Harding had fired his last shot of his .38. So at that point, we did have no choice but to put our hands in the air. This is the peculiar thing, of course, which is, I suppose, known to the fighting soldier, is that the fighting soldier doesn't bear any ill will towards his enemy at all. The only ill will that is born towards enemies takes place much further back by the people who don't actually do the fighting. And certainly when these Chinese captured us, the first thing that I was given, I think, was a cigarette, followed by a cup of tea, and then one soldier who was supposed to be looking after me, he indicated his greatcoat that he'd been lying on and made signs that I should go to sleep there, which I did. But there was no sign of animosity, which was peculiar, really, when I remember now that some of those Chinese, maybe not this particular group, had been napalmed by American aircraft. And during the course of leaving the hill, we had seen these napalm bodies, and they looked a bit like sausages that have been badly cooked and, you know, exploded.
You said earlier that you were hallucinating. What was the nature of the hallucinations?
Yes, I was seeing all kinds of coloured patterns, and I certainly was not mentally on this earth at all.
Did you then sleep?
No, we only slept, I think, for it can only have been for a couple of hours.
Was anything taken from you?
No, because I didn't at that point have a weapon. My weapon was a Sten gun, and I thought there is no point in a Sten gun without ammunition. It was a very cheap affair. It didn't have a bayonet. You couldn't use it for anything. So I dismantled it into its three component parts and hid it in various cracks miles away so it couldn't be of use or to anybody.
What about personal possessions like watches?
Watches, no, they didn't take that off me. I was only dressed at that point in a normal khaki flannel shirt, a vest, a pair of battle dress trousers, socks and boots, and a cap comforter, yes.
Were you given anything to eat and drink?
Oh yes, we had this cup of tea. We didn't have anything to eat for, oh, I don't know, about 6 hours, I suppose, something of that sort of order. And then we had what became known as bug dust, which is the Chinese, it is the Chinese soldiers' combat rations. They carry it in a long cotton sausage about 3 foot long, and it is made out of toasted soya bean and sorghum ground up together and made into a powder. And in this way each soldier can carry, I suppose, something like 10 days supply of food on his body. And the way you eat it is by mixing it with water, and it turns into a paste. It's not unpalatable, but it does rather gum up the roof of the mouth.
Why bug dust?
Because that's it had a it was similar to those sort of what were they before DDT came out? Something like that. Things that you put around the house or something like that to
flea
keep
powder.
Flea powder. Anyhow, that was just the nickname it was subsequently given, bug dust.
What did the Chinese soldiers look like close up?
Not, I suppose, the average height was somewhere around about 5'6". Smell of garlic was pronounced, but not as pronounced as it was later. I presume this was because these particular soldiers were on just on bug dust, and they didn't have the advantage of cooked meals while they were fighting.